is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about actually an update on workers' compensation laws and issues. My guests are Alice O'Sullivan, a past chair of the Board of Legal Specialization. She's also a member of the California Applicants Attorneys Association, usually referred to as CAW, C-triple-A. She is now a mediator doing workers' comp cases. My additional guest is Gilbert Stein, past president of CAW. His offices are in Monterey and Santa Cruz counties, and both of my guests are specialists in workers' compensation law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Applicants Attorneys Association, whose members statewide represent workers injured at the workplace. It's also funded by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Gil, are you there?
I am.
In beautiful Santa Cruz.
Yes.
How's the weather down there?
Clear but cold.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's been pretty cool up here. What I would like to do, if you would, my understanding that I have been given, and Alice is in the studio with me, my understanding is that employers, insurance companies are denying more frequently the claims of workers who've been injured on the job. And I think let's start there. What's going on here, Alice, with this more frequent denial?
Well, I think what there's two really important things about this, Chuck. And one is just because your case is denied doesn't mean you don't have a case. What it means is, for some reason, the employer or their insurance carrier has denied the case. We're seeing a few more denials, or denials more quickly, perhaps, this is speculation, but perhaps because until a case is either accepted or denied, the employer or workers' compensation insurance carrier, they are liable for up to $10,000 in medical treatment. So in other words, if you have an injury on the job, you are entitled to get medical treatment up to $10,000 until your claim is either accepted or denied.
If it's denied, what happens there?
If it's denied, maybe Gil can discuss this. I think we're going to discuss some updates, and that may mm-hmm. affect all of this mm-hmm. somewhat. Mm-hmm. But I think the important thing is, don't just say, oh, my case is denied, there's nothing for me to do.
And don't throw in the towel.
Don't throw in the towel. There's a lot of things one can do. And so one of those things would be to contact an attorney, telling them the basis of the denial. Mm-hmm. Sometimes an attorney, based on that, can, just with one consultation, can tell you whether, in fact, that denial has some merit, or whether you should pursue it further.
Gil, when Alice says you should go to an attorney and get some advice, what recommendation generally would you have for someone who, obviously, this is new to that person, injured on the job, doesn't know what the law provides and what rights they may have? Who should they go to?
Well, I think that workers' compensation I've been practicing for over 25 years, and it seems that every year it seems to get a little more complicated. As much as the legislature wants to simplify it, it seems to be more complicated. So you need to go, someone who's hurt needs to go to somebody who does this as their specialty, and the State Bar does certify specialists in workers' compensation, among other fields. You don't want to go to a general practitioner, especially if the claim's been denied, because the insurance company may believe that they have a basis for denial, but sometimes their denial is based on inadequate information. To give you an example, often we see a denial that says that there's no medical evidence to justify the claim.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that may be because they haven't seen it. The employer never sent them a doctor's report, mm-hmm. and so they don't have it. And it's as simple as supplying them with a doctor's report that says the person, came to me with his arm bleeding in his work clothes. And, of course, it's a work injury. And I've had cases like that where as soon as the information is actually supplied to the insurance company, that claim is then accepted. Or sometimes it's based on a denial is based on a false legal theory. For instance, I had a case where a person was injured in it was a recreational activity, but it was a recreational activity that was sponsored by the employer, promoted on the employer's own website about how great they are to their employees. My client was required to wear a shirt that had the name of the company on it. Once I gave that information to the attorney representing the employer, they accepted the claim on the spot. Because they hadn't been given that information by the employer.
If
the employer just said, well, he was playing basketball, how could that be work-related?
Oh,
well,
my.
He was playing basketball, and it benefited the employer. It was part of he won a contest for being the best performer for the for that month by the employer. So, of course, it was work-related.
If a claim is denied, does the injured worker have the right under the workers' compensation law to retain his or her own doctor? And if so, what's the potential for assuming that this can be a justified workers' compensation injury with coverage under the workers' compensation laws? Will there be coverage for the worker's own medical doctor who he or she has chosen?
That would be on a case-by-case basis, but the trend now is that if the claim is accepted by the carrier or the employer, then the employer has the right to have their own network of doctors, essentially like an HMO.
Mm-hmm.
But that's if the claim is accepted. Not all employers have that, but if the employee is working for one of those companies, then there will be a list of doctors. There needs to be at least three specialists in the geographic area within 30 miles that person can choose. If the claim is not accepted, the person is free to use any doctor they want. They can use their own personal doctor if that doctor will agree to accept the case under those circumstances.
And
what about though, if I may, if you don't mind, let me complete this if you would. Okay, so the worker gets his or her own doctor, and let's say retains an attorney. Ends up being a good workers' comp case. What is the potential for the worker being reimbursed or having the employer or the insurance carrier covering workers' comp reimburse either the employee or pay directly to the injured worker's doctor what the fees were?
Let's presume that it was a denied claim.
Right.
The person went to an attorney. The attorney was able to establish that, in fact, it was a workers' compensation case that was valid. And under those circumstances, if the worker has been paying out of pocket, they should be reimbursed. If a private insurance company, say Blue Cross or a union trust fund, had been paying the medical bills, they need to be reimbursed. And a hospital or a physician that hasn't been paid, they're entitled to be paid as well.
Okay. Let me do this earlier in the program because I think it's very important for persons who may be listening to this program, whether it's live in the Bay Area or live on the Internet at www.kalw.org. This is the first half hour as a statewide version. I want to give you a couple of phone numbers and a couple of websites in case you want to do some looking into perhaps getting help if you have been injured or someone close to you has been injured. CAW, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, its website is www.caaa.org, or you can call 1-800-648-3132, 1-800-648-3132, or www.caaa.org. For the Board of Legal Specialization, the statewide number is 415-538-2100, and the website is www. And this is all lowercase, no caps, no spaces, California Specialist, that's singular, specialist.org, www.californiaspecialist.org. And certainly with respect to the Board of Legal Specialization, and Gail, you may be able to elaborate on this further, but for the Board of Legal Specialization, if you access its website, you can find out who the certified specialists are, whether it's in whether it's workers' comp or in any one of the 11 specialties that are certified by the board, to find out in your geographic area who they are. Is that the same thing with CAWS website or not, Gail? If someone wants to see if they can find an attorney who's a workers' comp attorney through the CAWS website.
Tell you the truth, I haven't looked for an attorney. I think that's a pretty good one.
Okay. But, you got one yourself,
it
huh?
But, it should be by geographic area. I do want to point out, though, when if a worker is looking for a certified specialist from the state bar, it may not distinguish between those who represent injured workers and those who represent insurance.
Okay, you got to be careful about that, certainly. Yeah, you got to find out what the story is by making the call and find out what it is when you do make the call. Let me, if you would, ask you this. With the economic situation as it is, which is very difficult for so many people and has been for several years now, if someone is injured on the job, and let's say it's not something that has hospitalized them, but it has created a pain for them, whatever it may be, and it's a constant pain and it's creating a problem, and they are very reluctant, let's say, to make a claim, what recommendation do you have for them? Because they may feel if they make a claim, maybe the employer may feel, hey, you're just a dredge on our work, we're going to fire you. What comments do you have about that, Gil?
Well, it is illegal to fire someone or discriminate in any way because they have filed a claim, contemplate filing a claim, or were injured on the job. That's the law. It's under Labor Code Section 132, Subsection A. However, in reality, we know that workers are afraid often to file a claim because there's this fear that if they do, they may be the first or the next one to go if there are layoffs. And the employer, it's not that hard for an employer to find some other reason to terminate an employment situation other than the work injury. So when someone says to me, I don't want to file a claim because I'm afraid I'm going to lose my job, I understand what they're saying. However, I've talked to so many people who said I didn't want to file because I was going to lose my job, or I thought, and months later they get terminated anyway. They didn't file a claim. And then it may be too late to file the claim because we have in California something called a post-termination law, which means if you file your claim after you're terminated, your claim may not be valid. There are a few exceptions, including if you sought medical treatment while you were still employed for that condition, even though you didn't file a claim, you might be able to activate the claim.
How soon after the injury do you have to file the claim under the law?
Well, I would never wait more than a year. I mean, that's your standard statute of limitations. The longer one waits, the harder it is to prove that that treatment was related to an injury. If you get hurt in June and don't see the doctor, you don't go to a doctor until 11 months later, it's not easy to prove that the injury in June is what caused the need for the treatment, 11 months later.
Alice, please.
Well, I had a thought, Chuck. Supposing somebody is not sure whether the pain they're experiencing in your example is really a result of their work or not. And so they don't want to file because they aren't sure whether they even have a workers' compensation case.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, there's no problem with just going to the doctor and asking them if you have some kind of medical insurance, just go like you would ordinarily go. If the doctor then says you have a on-the-job injury, that I think would give someone more confidence in filing the case. But in any event, I think it's important to emphasize what Gil has said, and that is, do not quit. If you think you have a workers' compensation claim, do not quit before you file
the
claim.
Do not quit your job, you're saying.
And then file the claim.
Yeah, yeah.
File the claim and then quit your job, if that's what you intend to do.
Right. I think that's important. And certainly, I have a client who claims he was hurt on the job, did see a doctor, did get terminated. He was in construction, so it was, you know, a seasonal layoff. And the facts are very difficult because of this layoff. He wasn't expecting it, so he thought he had more time to file. But it's a problem. And I think this is a good time I can mention the concept of what we call cumulative trauma, that your work injury does not have to be from a single event. It's like, you know, lifting up 80 pounds and tweaking your back or twisting your ankle. Those are specific injuries, and of course they're covered by workers' comp. But also we have repetitive stress injuries. It could be to the back. It could be something like a carpal tunnel or tendonitis of your arms and wrists. It could be a number of things. It could even be from prolonged standing, where people can develop problems with their feet and lower extremities. And many people don't realize that just wear and tear at the job can be a compensable injury.
What if you don't mind this, Gil, what if, for example, you had a job where you did have some kind of repetitive stress injury and you were on that job for several years, and then you got another position with another place and it continues on? What are the problems for that employee who may get to the point that he or she feels, boy, I really need medical care, and I'm seriously thinking about possibly filing a workers' comp claim with my current employer? What thoughts do you have on that?
Well, I think they should. Mm-hmm. And I can give you and your listeners a brief overview on that. If somebody says works 5 years for Safeways,
yeah,
and then they go, say, work 5 years for another supermarket, doing essentially the same job, they would file the claim against their current employer, because 5 years is certainly enough to cause an injury. And we have in California a doctrine that ascribes which insurance company or which employer would be responsible in these cumulative claims, and they take the last year of what's called injurious exposure. So if a person's last 5 years were with one company, that's generally enough to establish an injury, and that would only be that one employer. Sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, the more difficult one is, say, if you take a plumber or an electrician who's working a variety of different jobs throughout the year. They may have 3 months at one company and 4 months at another company. You can still have that kind of cumulative trauma,
mm-hmm.
but you might have more than, you know, might have two or three different employers involved.
And does that mean that you might be filing a claim as to each employer?
Yes, and if you don't, the other employer will
really
try to share the burden.
I see. Okay.
And sometimes you can choose. You can choose once, so you don't have to deal with them all. You mm-hmm. can, they call it elect, but you can sometimes choose one, and then you just go against them, and they get their money back later from the rest.
Okay. Right. And it would be up to medical experts to determine if, in fact, there was this cumulative injury, and if mm-hmm. so, which employers are responsible and what percentages of the responsibility do they have. In the case that you mentioned, Chuck, where somebody's, say, working 5 years for the same employer or more, then that's not an issue at all.
No. Okay. All right.
If you have an injury that is not work-related, say you hurt your back riding horseback, then you... And you are permanent, you're back at work, you're dealing with whatever pain you have as a result of that,
mm-hmm.
then you fall at work just because you had some disability to that same body part, supposing your back,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't mean you do not have a workers' compensation case. In other words, just because you had a problem with the same part of your body, you hurt that part on your job, you still have a workers' compensation claim.
Right, and I think that goes back to some of those reasons why claims may be denied,
mm-hmm.
is that sometimes the employer, the insurance company, knows about previous injuries or conditions, and they deny the claim because of that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And under work comp laws in California, at least, the work injury has to be at least one of the contributors to the disability. It doesn't have to be the only one.
Okay. Let me do this. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about workers' compensation issues and laws. This is our statewide version of the program, the first half hour. We continue live in the Bay Area for a full hour, live on the internet at www.kalw.org. In the second half hour, we will take calls from those listeners who are listening to the program live, obviously. My guests are Gil Stein, past president of CAW, California Applicants Attorneys Association. His offices are in Monterey and Santa Cruz counties. My other guest is Alice O'Sullivan, a past chair of the Board of Legal Specialization and also a member of the California Applicants Attorneys Association. She's now a mediator doing workers' comp cases. And my guests are both specialists in workers' compensation law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. I know you wanted to talk a bit before the end of the first half hour, besides filing a claim, filing with the Employment Development Department and other things that you might like to clarify for people so they don't get confused with, let's say, state disability versus Social Security, et cetera, et cetera. Could you take that on, Gil, and kind of try to clarify, if you would?
Okay, well, I'll try. First of all, for people in California, we have the Employment Development Department. They're responsible both for state disability, SDI, and for UI, the unemployment insurance. State disability is available for people who are injured or sick and not able to work. The benefits can go up for up to a year, and it's based on, I believe it's 55% of one's salary. And there needs to be doctor's certification. Okay. If not, and so people, if they're not sure if they're covered, all they have to do is look at their check stub, and then at the end of the year, their W-2, and they can see that there are there's a deduction for, I think it's CASDI, CalSDI, and that's available for people who are claiming workers' comp in a denied case. In other words, EDD will say, well, we shouldn't pay you if it's work-related, but since the insurance company is denying the claim, we will pay you up to a year.
Mm-hmm.
If, in fact, the claim is then accepted, then state disability will be reimbursed by the insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
And unemployment, of course, is through the same office, but you have to certify the opposite. You have to certify that you are able to work, that you're not disabled.
I see.
Those benefits generally don't last as long as state disability, and they are taxable. That's a big difference for a lot of people, and the maximum rate is considerably lower than what is for state disability. Alice, you were going to say something?
Yes, Gil, I'm sure you'll agree with me here that even if your case is accepted by the workers' compensation insurance company or the employer, you still want to file right away with EDD, not to get benefits, but to set your benefit level. For example, there's a length of time that you can receive temporary disability. If that time runs out, say it's 2 years, and you then go to collect your state disability money, sometimes because they base it on earnings, your earnings will be lower if you wait to file. So you don't want to collect them both at the same time.
Right. In fact, you can't collect the full amount for each. You can, and I don't want to complicate it, but Alice made a good point that you can file without collecting. And there should be, and people should understand that SDI is not the same as SSDI.
What is SSDI?
That is Social Security disability. And that is through the federal government, and it's for people who paid into Social Security and have worked enough to qualify for the disability. It has to be 20 out of the last 40 quarters. One of the requirements, though, generally, is to be off work for at least a year. So I advise my clients who are off work for, say, 9, 10, 11 months to apply for Social Security disability.
That's good advice, yes.
Whether or not they're successful or not, there's no charge for the application. And often people who have serious injuries are unable to go back to work for several years. And so with workers' compensation disability, temporary disability being capped at 104 weeks and state disability being capped at 1 year, sometimes the Social Security disability income is the only income that they're going to have.
And don't you find that often it takes quite a long time to actually get the Social Security disability?
It can take up to a year from the time that the application is made. So, yes, it is extremely time-consuming. But for those who are severely disabled and unable to go back to any kind of work, they definitely should apply for SSDI.
We are nearly out of time for the half-hour statewide version of the program. I know there was some comments you wanted to make about liens being placed on cases. Could you briefly talk about that?
Yes, actually, one of the guests that was going to be on the program and now was unable to this evening, Mike Rucka, suggested a provision that any case that's settled before the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board should have the liens paid prior to approval of the settlement.
Liens by doctors?
Liens, or medical liens, or other liens too, okay. Any lien that's on the case.
And the reason for that, why?
The reason for that is that these sometimes are drug out for a long, long time. They are making provisions to try to get these done more quickly, but it's kind of a sticky wicket at the moment.
So it's something you want to be careful about. All right, we have come to the end of the statewide version of the program. For those of you listening to us live, we will take calls in just a minute. All right, it is 7:20, it looks like about 7:28 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney, and I have the great pleasure of having two wonderful guests who've been with me over many, many years now. I think Alice O'Sullivan has been involved with this program for about 17 years.
Since Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Where's that old Tyrannosaurus? And she has. And by the way, everybody, I just want you to know this month is the 29th year that we have been doing this program. 23 of which or more are here. Or pardon me, no, 26 of which have been at KALW 91.7 FM.
Thank you, Chuck. Thanks for that.
And my other guest, Gil Stein, got involved with this program, as I recall, Gil, when you were the president of COG going back, what was the year, 2000?
I believe, actually, I was president in 2001 and 2002.
Yeah, and I think that's when you got involved, either about then or maybe even prior to that. I've had a wonderful relationship with CAW. It's been a great pleasure to have all of you come on the program and give advice, give information to people who may have been injured. So for those of you who've tuned in the last few minutes, let me give you the phone number, 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. And one of the persons who is considered to be one of two experts, real experts in this field, aside from Gil Stein, is Mike Rucka. And I hope Mike is listening. Mike is not well. He was going to join us, but unfortunately, I think he's got a bad case of the flu or the bad cold and couldn't make it. He was formerly a president of CAW. He's also a certified specialist in workers' comp, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization. And I hope you are listening, Mike. If so, I wish you well very, very soon. So, and my guest in the studio here is Alice O'Sullivan, past chair of the Board of Legal Specialization, member of the of CAW, which is the abbreviation for the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and Gil Stein, past president of CAW. His offices are in Monterey and Santa Cruz. So if those of you who would like to ask questions want to call in, it's 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. 4134. For those of you who are wondering, when are you doing the next Call a Lawyer Night? It will be next week, February 27th at 7 p.m. And while I'm doing a regular program on the air, which will be landlord-tenant law, there will be a number of attorneys, including Alice O'Sullivan, and I think at least two or three other certified specialists in the conference room here, and several other attorneys to take your calls off the air if you want to jot down this number. Whether you listen to the program live or not, you're welcome to join us with your call on February 27th between 7 to 8 p.m., 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. And before we take our first call, well, wait a minute, we've got Mary. Mary, welcome to your legal rights.
Hi.
Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Oh, great. Thank you. So my question involves my husband, who's filed their workers' compensation claim. He's worked for a construction company for 16 years. It's non-union, and he's a foreman. And last October, there was a freaky incident where something happened at the job, and he had some scaffolding came down on, this is in San Francisco, and he had to quickly kind of put this, there was a gardening thing there, and he had this tube in his mouth, and he tripped, and his tooth came out.
Uh-huh.
So we filed this claim. We went to our dentist first, and they suggested that we go to workers' comp. And we filed this claim back in October, and they suggested we go to their referred dentist and their referred oral surgeon. We've done that, and the suggestion was that he gets an implant because mm-hmm. what happened to the tooth, it would not have come out unless this accident had happened. And we keep going back to this company, Express Dental, that we're supposed to be reporting to, and they keep saying, well, the claims person needs to respond. So I've left several messages, and I've written a letter, and we still haven't heard anything.
So has there not been the kind of medical treatment that you had expected your husband would receive?
No, the only thing that they have approved so far, because every time we go somewhere, they said, yes, we've got to wait to make an appointment, and then you get this approval. So thus far, we've been following their instructions to go to their dentist. First visit was in October to their dentist, and then November to their oral surgeon, and they've made the recommendations that he should get an implant.
But nothing's happened.
Nothing's happened.
All right, let me get some comments from Gil on this. And is there some current law or expected law in workers' compensation law, Gil, that you feel may be of some assistance to Mary and her husband? And Mary, let me ask you this. Does your husband have an attorney?
No, we...
Okay. I think that's a real mistake, and we'll talk about that. So why don't you turn your radio back up and get some of the comments from my guests, and then we'll talk about your husband seeing an attorney. So thank you very much for calling.
Thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Gail, what comments do you have for Mary regarding what her husband's dilemma may be?
Okay. Well, unfortunately, what Mary described is not that uncommon, particularly mm-hmm. in the very beginning stages of, it's only a few months past the injury. It doesn't sound like they've actually denied the treatment. They're just not doing anything.
It's called the drag the heels approach, right?
Right. Now, if you don't have an attorney, you're basically going to have to accept that process. What an attorney can do in a situation like this is file what's called a declaration of readiness, and to go to the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board, I would file what's called an expedited hearing on the issue of medical care, because again, if the treatment's being denied, that's another process. But it's not. It doesn't sound like it's being denied. It's just
not being processed. It's not being done.
Right, and it should be. There's no reason for a delay like that. The reason for the delay, I believe, is that implants are about $2,500 each.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think it's a question of cost as opposed to medical, you know, some medical reason.
You know, the reason I said to Mary that I thought it was a mistake that her husband did not have an attorney is, one, I'm a great believer in people trying to protect themselves as much as possible, self-help if possible, but then there's a point where self-help is not enough. And one of the beauties, I think, of the workers' compensation system is that people don't have to pay out of their own pocket for their attorney. Is that correct, Gil?
Yes, it is. We work on a contingency fee. The fee is essentially set by the appeals board itself. The judges have to approve it. I've had a number of clients who've offered to pay me cash, and I said, as much as I'd like to accept it, I can't.
Because that would be unethical, would it not?
It would also be illegal.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Which isn't always the same thing, as you know.
Right.
But my fee has to be approved by a workers' compensation judge, and that's to protect both the attorney and the injured party to make sure that there isn't abuse. Because we know that people who are hurt on the job or hurt at any time are more vulnerable. They're in pain. They can't necessarily make rational decisions because of sometimes being with a lot of medication. And this is one way of protecting them. Not only would my fee have to be approved, but also the settlement itself approved by the appeals board
mm-hmm.
to make sure that the person is getting not necessarily the best settlement, but at least an adequate settlement.
You know, Mary, if you're there, I hope you have something to write with. I'm going to give you, earlier in the program, I gave a couple of websites and a couple of phone numbers. I want to do it again because I think it's terribly important that people know where they can call or what website they can go to try to educate themselves of what the next step may be. And for CAW, that's the California Applicants Attorneys Association, the website is www.caaa.org. The phone number is 1-800-648-3132. And for the Board of Legal Specialization, the statewide number is 415-538-2100. And the website is and this is all lowercase, no spaces, California Specialist, that's singular, specialist.org, californiaspecialist.org. Before we take our next call, I also want to let you know about the lawyer referral service that is available also on a statewide basis. And one of our funders of your legal rights is the San Francisco Bar. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KALW listeners like you. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own. That number is 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. Every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. They'll do their best to find someone who has knowledge in the area you're having the problem with. They'll set you up for a half an hour consultation. There cannot be I don't believe there can be a charge, though, if they refer you to a workers' comp attorney, because that has to be determined otherwise. But that's something you would check out with your own lawyer referral service through the Bar Association for half an hour. Other than workers' comp, the low price might be $25, might be $35, and that goes to the Bar Association, not to the lawyer.
I think it's
Alice,
important
yeah.
to point out, and Mary's brought up a very good question, and that is, any time I have an on-the-job injury, do I need a lawyer? And the answer to that is no. You don't always need a lawyer. But in this case, if there's something that's being delayed, something that's being denied, the process to get that remedied, as Gil so correctly pointed out, to file for expedited hearing, to file these declarations, all of that is complicated and you do better with an attorney.
All right, Dawn, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, hello.
Hi. You're on the air, my dear.
Yes, thank you very much.
Sure.
I had a foot injury in 2005, and then in 2006, I had a very bad slip and fall. Mm-hmm. And then I had an aggravation of the neck by in the emergency room. And I had a back. Initially, it was the back. Anyway, I got a neck surgery in 2008, and I was returned to work. And I had a back surgery in 2010, and my last working day was October 2009. And we had a meeting with one objective person who is no longer with that company anymore. He said he would help me. I have not gotten any work, and I haven't gotten any TD.
And what do you mean by that? You haven't gotten any what?
Temporary disability.
You have not? Have you had an attorney?
I have an attorney. He has to work very, very hard. He has a lot of people, and he's very busy.
Well, let me ask you a question. I'm not, okay, you said you haven't received any temporary disability.
I don't believe I have. Now, I lost some memory because of the neck injury.
Hold on, Dawn. Let Gil talk. Go ahead, Gil.
You had a number of injuries. The reason you're off work now is because of which date of injury?
I was returned to work in June of 2011, but they didn't give me any work. I've been waiting for work.
Okay, so your employer, you returned to work as being able to work, but your employer says we don't have anything for you?
Correct. But I have some restrictions because I can't go back to my old job, but I can do other things.
But they've told you that they say that they don't have anything for you.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
And then they told me after I had been out, I was working with them trying to get a job, and then they told me that I had been, I had not worked in November, they told me they couldn't use me anymore, or they couldn't use me because I had not been working for 3 years, even though the last year and a half,
so were you,
I had been working with them to get my job back.
Dawn, have you been fired?
Not that I know of.
Are you being paid at all, any salary?
Not since 2009.
Not since, oh my God.
Okay, so the date of the injury is before 2009.
Yeah, it was in November 2006 was this big slip and fall. My feet went up and then I came down. And then I was returned to work for a while after the neck surgery. But I had I had a very rough boss who was very hard.
Okay, this is one of the things
Dawn.
She stopped my job.
Dawn, please stop. Please stop for a minute because we're getting close.
I think I may have the answer here. If the date of injury is 2006?
Yes, sir.
And did you receive temporary disability then? Some?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you're not entitled to any more because the law, unfortunately, was changed in 2004 that said you can only get up to 104 weeks from the first payment of temporary disability until the last payment of temporary disability. Mm. So if you got temporary disability in 2006, you would not be eligible for temporary disability anytime after 2008. Have you applied for Social Security disability?
No, I wanted to go back to work.
Well, I would suggest that you haven't worked in several years. You should apply for a Social Security disability.
You know, you've got nothing to lose, Dawn, as Gil is trying to communicate to you by applying for Social Security disability. You still can continue to seek work, but at this point, you need to get some income coming in. We're going to move on because your case is so very complicated.
I understand. Thank you very much for your time.
Don, listen to me for just one more minute, if you don't mind, because I know you're terribly frustrated with this whole thing. Next week, February 27th, we do our regular Call a Lawyer night. You may never have listened to this program before or may not even know about that. But Alice O'Sullivan, who is sitting right next to me, will be here for Call a Lawyer night. She's a very renowned specialist in workers' compensation law. She will be doing Call a Lawyer while I'm doing the regular program. She'll be available in a conference room here. What you might want to do next week, next Wednesday, February 27th at 7 p.m., you have something to write with right now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, 1-800-525-9917.
If you call, Don, just remind me that you're the one that called tonight.
Yeah, don't forget to do that. And in the future, should you call, you don't need to call me, sir. You just can call me Chuck.
All right, Chuck.
All right, take care, Don.
Thank you.
Yeah, call next week, please. And you can talk at greater length with Alice at that time. All right, take care. Bye-bye. All right, we have Mike. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, good evening.
Hi.
Hi. I'm an employer, and I was just curious if you guys could suggest some kind of redress that I might. It's interesting. The workers' comp is always focused so heavily on the employee, but as a small business employer, it doesn't feel balanced. And I had a circumstance that happened about 2 years ago, and it's cost us a huge amount of money. And I was just curious if you had any response to how I might try to manage this.
Did you have to, didn't you have insurance, workers' comp insurance, Mike?
We do, yes.
But when you say it cost you an enormous amount of money,
let me explain from the employer's point of view.
Yeah.
So there's something called a modification rate, which you might be familiar with.
Just keep going.
Okay. So say we had a modification rate of 100, which would be exactly what the insurance should charge unless you have a really good record. And we're a young company. So we had somebody working for us for about 2 years and was fired for cause. 3 months later, he called up and wanted to know who our workers' comp carrier was and claimed that he had injured his neck, his back, his groin, and his shoulder. And our bookkeeper gave him the workers' comp information. He filed a claim, and after realizing he filed the claim, we contacted the insurance company and indicated to the insurance company we were totally unaware of any injury being reported or any injury happening. And so the insurance company actually put a private detective on this guy, got photographs of him lifting and installing sheetrock, which needs shoulder, back, groin strength. And they sent this information to me. So I just assumed this case was not going to move forward. The next thing I find out, our workers' comp modification rate is being raised by 4 points because there's been a huge amount of money set aside. This character has an attorney. There's been a huge amount of money set aside. There's a lawsuit that's proceeding. And as far as we're concerned, it's a bogus claim, mm-hmm. but the process is moving so slowly. And what's happened to us is where if last year we paid $70,000 in workers' comp, this year because of this claim, our workers' comp costs have gone up to $150,000.
Wow. So it's been more than doubled. Let me get some comments for you, Mike. Can he, Gil, turn his radio back up?
Sure.
Yeah, Mike, turn your radio back up, and I want to get some comments for you from my guests, and thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
So what does he do, Gil, in a situation like this where, let's assume for the moment, this is a bogus claim, however, the insurance company has looked at this claim where this guy is former worker, is claiming all of these injuries, and has increased the premiums for workers' comp coverage on Mike's small business. What comments do you have?
Well, I'll let Alice comment also because she did work for an insurance company, but
I think this is just an example how insurance companies tend to to screw both the workers and the employers. The insurance company is required by law to put some money aside to cover the claims. And these companies that don't do that, it's called reserving, sometimes end up going bankrupt because they don't put enough money aside. Now, in this particular, and it could be based on the potential, if they were happen to lose the case, of what the potential liability was, not necessarily factoring in the likelihood of that happening. The other comment I wanted to make on this is that workers' compensation is designed to help the employee, but it's also designed to protect the employer, because your listener had workers' compensation insurance, they're immune from civil liability. Mm-hmm. So the employee cannot sue even for negligence, even for gross negligence. His remedy is exclusively in the workers' compensation system.
Let me throw something back at you, Gil, on this. Let's assume that this case finally comes before the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board, and whoever the judge may be throws it out. It's proven that this was a bogus claim. Now, therefore, assume for the moment that that's the case, and the insurance company doesn't, workers' comp insurance company doesn't have to pay anything with respect to this so-called injured employee. Would that be the basis for Mike trying to apply to his workers' comp company for a reduction in premium because this reserve was set aside for a bogus claim, or is that getting much too complicated at this point?
Well, it's certainly out of my area of expertise, It's certainly something that he should talk to his insurance broker about.
I certainly would.
I have a couple of suggestions, Mike. One is one sometimes gets lost in the heat of what's going on. You mentioned the films. I've seen a lot of films both on both sides of the fence here, both representing injured workers and representing employers. The problem with films is they're only good if, and by good I'm talking about, they only serve to help you, the employer, if the injured worker is doing something the doctor says they cannot do. I've seen a lot of film where people are doing certain jobs, but the doctor hasn't restricted them from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So while he may be hanging sheetrock, unless that activity has something the doctor says, there's no way this guy can do that, your films are not worth much. Now, there's two things I think you can do. One is you have the right to talk to whoever's handling this case, and you should talk to them regularly. Why hasn't this case come up for hearing? Why isn't this before a judge?
You're talking about to the insurance company?
Yes.
Okay.
They have a right to set this case for hearing.
Yeah.
They have a right to get this all said and done. The longer it's delayed, the less likelihood of a good result. That's my experience.
Yeah.
I think you need to find out, what does this film mean? So they've got him doing that. What does the doctor say he can do? Why is this case not before a judge? What's going on? I would call the insurance company, I'd call them every 2 weeks and say, give me a status report. What's going on? What have you paid? Are you paying all this out in expenses? You're not paying the injured worker anything. Why is that? Can we, if there's an iffy situation, can we settle it? Can we settle it for less money? Can we settle it now?
Mm-hmm.
If settlement is not an option and it's really as bogus as you think it is, then get it before a judge and get a decision.
In that Mike is obviously struggling, to say the least, financially, and this case seems to be taking a long time, struggling financially in terms of what the insurance company has done in terms of the premium. Would you recommend, Alice, that if Mike has not retained an attorney to assist him in this, that he might do that, to have an attorney?
Not.
Oh, no.
Not at this point.
You would not? Okay.
Because he would have to basically pay for it himself.
Well, that's true.
And that's just more money.
That's true. Okay.
I think communication is a great tool. And I think communication with either the claims adjuster or whoever sold you the insurance, find out why this isn't moving. Put your they work for you. The insurance company works for you. Make them put up.
And they're not all the same. Some insurance companies do a much better job than others.
That's very true.
All right. Well, good luck to you, Mike, on that. We'll take one more. I think we have time for one more very brief call, and that's Elaine. And for those of you who were not able to talk to my guests on the program again, next week is Call a Lawyer Night. Alice O'Sullivan will be here in the conference room, and you can call her at 1-800-525-9917. Elaine, do you have a quick question by any chance?
I think it's pretty quick. Thanks. I work in a school. And I noticed that whenever I get in this environment, I have started coughing. And it's gotten worse over time, and I have this situation with my throat now where I can't ever really truly clear it. And I'm wondering, could it be something coming out of the pipes where I sit? There's these huge pipes over my head.
Don't tell us the school.
Place I could call to see if they could check the air.
Right. Don't tell us the school. What city?
It's in Oakland.
Oakland, okay. And it's a public school?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you might get a lot of times, Gil, you can respond to this, but a lot of times the filters haven't been changed.
Yeah.
You can find that out. Gil, what do you have?
Yeah, sometimes an environmental hygienist can come and check it out. And I have had a couple of cases of problems like that. Mold, and we know that there are mold in some buildings. There's something called a sick building syndrome.
Yeah.
Where that's happened. I don't know if this is that case, but it's certainly something that can be checked out, and you should check with the other people in other classrooms and see if it's just not where you are.
You know, Elaine, also, I think what you might do if you haven't done this, in my job as a DA for San Mateo County, I deal with the Environmental Health Department of San Mateo County. You should call the Alameda County Environmental Health Department and see if they can't send one of their environmental people over to do an air check. This is not a big deal. It's simple for relatively simple for them to do. And if you haven't reported this, you should.
I should?
Yeah.
I just wasn't sure if I was just coming down with this. But
do
it. It's been about a year now.
Do it. You got nothing to lose.
A long time. No, I would check it out.
Completely.
Do it, Elaine. Give them a call. Good luck to you.
So will they come out and check the air?
That's the idea.
And then if there was something wrong with the air, do I have a case?
I think so.
Oh.
At least to clear it up, clean it up. Okay, we've come to the end of the program. I want to thank you both very much for joining me on Your Legal Rights. It's always a pleasure to have two people who've been such a great supporter of this program and making your information available to all of us who listen to this program. Alice O'Sullivan, past chair, Board of Legal Specialization, member of the Applicants Attorneys Association, and Gil Stein, past president of CAW, offices in Monterey and Santa Cruz County. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Chuck.
Great to have you both on the program. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Applicants Attorneys Association, the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, the Trusts and Estates Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, we're going to be doing our regular landlord-tenant laws and issues program. My guests are landlord-tenant attorneys James Coy Driscoll and Mark Seidenfeld. It's also our Call a Lawyer night. That will be February 27th. And you can call 1-800-525-9917 for Call a Lawyer starting at 7 p.m. Thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney.